DW.
In February, Meena Gulli completed 100 marathons in 100 days to draw attention to the shortage and wastage of water. But this isn't the first challenge she's undertaken. In 2016, Meena ran 40 marathons through 7 deserts in 7 weeks. And in 2017, she ran the equivalent of 40 marathons in 40 days down 6 of the world's great rivers. And if that isn't enough, Meena has also founded Thirst, a non-profit organisation dedicated to educating people on how to avoid wasting water.
The first thing I actually did before I started running was to found Thirst, because my theory of change is that in order for us to solve our global water crisis, we need to change the way we consume. And the main reason for that is because water goes into everything we use, buy, and consume every day. And what's scary about it is as population rises, as our demand for more stuff increases, so does our demand for water. And unfortunately, less than 1% of the water that's on Earth is available to us to use. So what I decided to do was to really focus on how we can reduce this demand for water. So I started Thirst in China, fastest growing consumer economy in the world, and we started going and educating the next generation of students. We started in 2012, and at that time we educated only 10,000 kids. And I thought, wow, yes, it takes one person at a time to change the world, but it's going too slow because experts predict that by 2030, there's going to be a 40% greater demand for water than the supply of water available. And I was like, wow, if we just go step by step, we're never going to be able to meet this deadline. So we scaled as quickly as we could. And in the intervening time, we've educated over 2 million kids. But the reason I started running is because I realized we had to do something even bigger to capture the attention and the imagination of global media, of people around the world, so that others would start to tell the story. So it wasn't just us singing this story about saving water.
And it absolutely has caught the attention of the world. Everyone's out here going, how? Are you okay? Do you need any help? You were getting up at 4:30 a.m. every morning to do these marathons. What was keeping you going through all of that?
Yeah, so on the 4th of November, when I started running, I started the New York City Marathon. And I confess, I stood on the starting line amidst 20,000 other people. There's like this big buzz at the start of any marathon. So anyone who's listening to this that's run a marathon will feel very familiar with that moment of nerves when you're standing on the starting line. But unlike everybody else there, all I was thinking about was I have to run a marathon today and tomorrow and the next day and the day after. As someone who's a self-confessed non-runner and someone who doesn't really like running, every day to get myself up in the morning at 4:30 to keep going when my whole body is aching, the only thing I think about is the next generation and what kind of world I want to leave for them. The most important thing is to leave a world where there's enough water for them not only to live but to achieve their dreams, because without water, there's no economy, there's no society, and most importantly, there's no life.
There must have been people you were speaking to before you were doing this saying, I'm going to do this thing. How did they react?
Yeah, I think, okay, in reality, most people thought I was completely barking mad. I think that's a term that was actually used many times. Meena, you're barking mad. People called me crazy. People call me all different things. But if we only listen to what people say we can't do, we'll never discover what we can.
And then at 62 days in, something happened.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Everything was going great. Okay, so let's put this in perspective. So I started running in New York. We flew across the ocean, landed in London, told a bunch of amazing stories about food waste because 70% of the world's water goes into agriculture. Most of it gets thrown out. It's horrifying how much food we throw away. And every time we throw away food, we're throwing away water, right? And it was the real point of all of this was to go and tell those stories of people on the ground and then to tell it in a way that people around the world would be able to connect with the problem and help then to become part of the solution. At day 62, something really bad happened. I'd been having pain up for about a week, honestly, probably a lot longer than that, but I blocked it out when I couldn't put my foot down anymore. I literally couldn't put my foot down. My team carried me into the car and they said, tomorrow, if you can't walk across the room, by that stage, we're no longer staying in tents because I couldn't get on and off the floor because I was so sore. And they said, if you can't walk across the room unaided, you're not going to run. You're going to go to the hospital. So So of course I couldn't even walk one step, right? So meanwhile, I of course think I'm going to go run a marathon, but they take me to the hospital and I get a scan and we discover I've got a fracture in my leg, not a little fracture, an absolutely massive fracture in my leg. And the doctors told me if you keep going, you're going to permanently injure yourself. The bone will break all the way through and you'll have to have surgery and screws and bolts and grafts and all kinds of bad things, which will mean that your future of running across continents and down rivers will be over. It was a terribly tough time because I really felt that my whole world had turned black, that my campaign was over, that I had let down the community of people whose stories I had been gifted to tell, and the people that we'd scheduled to meet in the days that were coming up. And if I stopped, I wouldn't be able to tell their stories. In that moment of darkness, a very amazing thing happened, which is that my phone started to buzz with messages of people who had heard about the problem, who started to offer to do miles for me. And on day 63, when I sat in my wheelchair, I watched my team go out and run a marathon for me. And on day 64, people we didn't know came and ran with my team to do miles for me. And on day 65, people from other parts of the world started to join in, and very, very quickly, we had thousands of people in over 160 cities in more than 50 countries and territories on every single continent of this globe running for water and running to support this campaign. By day 100, instead of doing 100 marathons in 100 days, we had run further than from the North Pole to the South Pole, and we had run thousands and thousands of kilometres together. So instead of being my ambition to run 100 marathons, this became a whole global movement for change.
And you still continued the tour after that, meeting
yes.
people?
Yeah. Yes.
What did you learn from all these different people that you met around the world?
I think one of the amazing things was that the messages from everybody was, Mina, just look after yourself, go tell the stories, we'll do the miles. Because there's two parts of this campaign, right? One is the miles. We've got to go tick these boxes of, yes, I've done a marathon every day for 100 days, right? Because it's all about 100% commitment. This is not just a number I plucked out of the middle of nowhere. This is all symbolism. 100 marathons, 100 days, 100% commitment. This is what we need to solve this crisis. 40 marathons, 40%, right? A marathon is equal to 40% difference between demand and supply for water. So the first one I learned from the people who participated in the campaign and people who ran was that you don't have to be anyone to be someone. That every single one of us is capable of doing great things, things beyond anything we could possibly imagine, if only we allow us to do so, and if only we don't listen to those others that constrain us, like we were talking about at the beginning, that we actually see the possibilities of what we as a planet, as a community, as an individual can do. So I think that was my first kind of big lesson. The second lesson is from the people I met on the ground, which is that the water crisis isn't someone else's problem. It's our problem too, that every single one of us is connected to the problems that we see, whether it's the water issues in the RLC, whether it's the cotton fields of India. We don't think, where did my T-shirt come from? Where did my clothing, where did my food originate? It came from places where they may be suffering from water scarcity, but we don't ask those questions. We've forgotten that we're all connected on our planet. So the second thing I think I thought was, you know, this is not someone else's problem, it's our problem too. And the third thing I learned actually was through my own experience, which was every single one of us can make a difference. This is like, you people, it's easy to think I'm just one person. What change can I do? What impact can I have? What can I do? But when it really comes down to the bottom line, every one of us can do one thing. It doesn't have to be running 100 marathons. It can be someone like Mike, who is a brewer in the US, and he's figured out how to make beer using 60% less water. Or there's a farmer in Jordan who's got 23 kids, like 23 kids, and he's figured out how to grow lemons in the middle of the desert using really water-efficient piping from a little spring that exists on his property. You know, he makes enough money that he can send his kids to school. Or like there's a guy who met him, he's like, hi, my name's the Cactus Man. And he grows indigenous trees and plants and helps to rehabilitate the Rio Grande. You know, all these people have just said, what can I do? What is the one thing that I can do to help solve this problem? And they've come up with a solution.
That's absolutely wonderful.
I have one final question, and that's, you've done something in 2016, 2017, 2018. What's coming next? You seem like you've got so many big ideas and so much optimism and positivity. Yeah. What's in the future?
That's a really good question. Depends if my mum is listening or not. Look, the first thing I need to do is to get my leg better. But I have said right from the moment when I stood on the bank of a river in South Africa, there's a river called the Orange River and it runs between South Africa and Namibia. But I stood on the bank of that river as the local people showed me these high water marks way up on the edge of the riverbank. And they said, that's where the river was like 6 years ago. Look at this, it's towering above me. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, this is the way of life that we have now. We cannot afford to make things the same way that our parents and our grandparents made them before us. And we cannot afford to treat water in the way that we have. We need to do things differently and smarter and better. And I stood on the bank of that river, and sometimes you just feel that your life has fundamentally shifted. And I thought to myself, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to run for as long as it takes, as far as it takes, as much as it takes to solve our planet's water crisis. So what will I do this year? I'd really like to finish the 38 marathons that are still remaining, the ones that were contributed by the local community. And I want to do those with the local community, with the people, go back to the places, the stories that we didn't tell, whose people want to tell their relationship with water. The next campaign will be No Excuses, and it will be about mobilizing and joining together and celebrating the fact that we have an incredible community that has joined together to get these marathons done and joined together to make saving water famous.
Meena Gooley, thank you so much for coming to speak to me.
Pleasure.
Thank you. DW.